Hey everybody, welcome to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm your host, Brenton Bickerstaff, and this week on the show we have a lecture from John Van Auken, entitled Our Amazing Soul Life. John Van Auken is an internationally renowned speaker, longtime staff member, and current director at the ARE. He is the author of many books, including From Karma to Grace, and his newest, 2038, The Great Pyramid Timeline Prophecy. John is also a regular contributor to Venture Inward magazine. He is an acknowledged expert on the Cayce readings, the Bible, ancient prophecies, world religions, and meditation. You can see the full lecture at edgarcayce.org when you sign up for our free news. And of course, all ARE members have access to the full talk at edgarcayce.org/members. Join John Van Auken for one of these special activities. He has one coming up on October 23rd, and it runs through November 19th. And this is an online learning e-group entitled Achieving Higher States of Consciousness Using Ancient Egyptian Concepts. To sign up for this, go to edgarcayce.org/e-group. October 26th in Fairfax, Virginia, John Van Auken is doing a talk on Cayce on the life force within you, rejuvenate and illuminate body, mind, and spirit. And for details on this or other field programs, visit edgarcayce.org/fieldconferences. On December 7th in Virginia Beach, John is a featured speaker at the conference entitled Christ and Christmas Today, Experiencing the Kingdom Within. If you'd like to register for this or other conferences, go to edgarcayce.org, click on events, and then click on conferences. Last but not least, John Van Auken is hosting a tour of Italy through the ARE. This is in summer of 2014, and details for this can be found at edgarcayce.org/tours. Hope you guys enjoy the lecture from John Van Auken on Our Amazing Soul Life.
Okay, so we start out with life in and beyond the physical, and of course, I'm going to be presenting much of the Cayce material, the Edgar Cayce material that these 5 acres established. And for those of you who are kind of new to this, when Edgar was a young boy, he had a lot of extrasensory qualities to him that he didn't realize were extrasensory. He thought all of us had them. But as he grew older, he found out we didn't. Some of these were pretty useful. For example, one night he did not know his spelling words, and his father was fed up with this. I had 3 kids, so I know exactly how he felt. And the little boy said, hey, Dad, if you'll let me sleep on this spelling book for about 15 minutes, I'll know the words. Now, my 3 have tried all sorts of stuff in there. I have thought about this. I don't honestly know if I would have gone for that, but his dad did. Okay, kid, you got 15 minutes. And he put the spelling book underneath his head and what appeared to us to be sleep. And then his dad came in and said, okay, let's see about this hocus pocus. Flipped the page and he started, and the kid knew how to spell every word. Then Edgar said, Dad, I don't just know every word on that page. I know every word in that book and exactly what page it's on. And things like this developed. Eventually, he had the ability to go into this sort of sleep-like state, and I believe that's why he got nicknamed the Sleeping Prophet. One of the best-selling books was titled that. And help people with physical problems. And the local doctors in his area started to use him a lot. And he proved to be outstanding. It was strange because it was actually as if he was seeing and analyzing the entire body of the other person seeking help. He knew the chemistry, he knew the blood rate, the heart rate, he knew their history. And he explained it that even though we all are individual, there's a oneness that connects us all. And you can tap into that oneness, and that's basically what he was doing. Well, after about 20 years, he was in Ohio giving a health reading, only the guy who got it got upset about his health situation and said, well, why do I have this illness? And calmly as can be, Edgar from his sleep trance state said, because in a previous life, as a monk in France, you abused the body and this is the karma of that situation. And everybody was stunned. except the receiver of the information, for he believed in all that stuff. So he started questioning the sleeping Casey, and that began what got nicknamed the life readings. And they developed into what we're going to see today, all the content about the soul's life, the soul's journey, not just the journey of your physical body, which he seemed to be able to tap into as well. So let's begin with that. In the beginning, he says, we find in the beginning when the first of the elements were given and the forces set in motion that brought about the sphere, as we find called earth plane. He saw this more as a dimension than just a rock in space. And when the morning stars sang together, that's a reference right out of the book of Job, and the whispering winds brought the news of the coming of man's indwelling, of the spirit of the Creator became the living soul. This entity came into being with this multitude. Here's the really tricky thing. You and I were conceived back then. When God said, let there be light, Egger explained that the essence of that comment was the conception of every bit of consciousness, all the individuals. Now, some of us didn't move right away. We stayed very still, and you could not have discerned us from the Creator, the one collective essence we were in harmony with. As soon as you used your free will to do something, to express something, or react to something, you started to develop a unique story, and that's your soul. But as he's saying here, the spirit of the Creator became a living soul through our expression and the freedom. And it was a magnificently loving, creative moment to conceive in the one, the many, which is written on our dollar bills, e pluribus unum, and to let the adventure begin. But you see, he's saying to us that in Job, when it says the morning stars, he identified us as the morning stars. You know, the ancient Egyptians considered us star beings that had descended into it. And they had a nickname for us, godlings of the great God. And so we actually began back there, and we have a depth to us that we're not aware of. We tend to focus mostly on being born into the earth, and we don't realize this other depth. It still gets through us. It affects us. And there are moments of flashes. So that's what we're going to see in this journey. Here's another individual. We find the entity was among those in the day when the forces of the universe came together, when there was upon the waters the sound of the coming together of the sons of God. Don't worry, ladies. The sons of God are hermaphroditic, androgynous, male and female in one. I'll explain that later. When the morning stars sang together, and over the face of the waters there was the voice of the glory of the coming of the plain for man's dwelling. At that time, we thought it was really cool. I don't know how you feel about it today, but back then, this looked like a real interesting place. In all of these, we find some of this present, entity's individuality. And in some personalities are brought through. I know now you're starting to get worried that I'm talking about multiple personalities and all. Believe it or not, he used the term individuality for our bigger, unique soul self. But that entity, that original being, projects little bits of itself in what we call personalities, for an incarnation, and those feed back into the greater whole of the individuality. So you see what he's saying to this individual here? You began back then, but on your journey, you have experienced many personalities that you've projected and lived a sojourn, 80 to 100-year sojourn. Then it's been assimilated back into your individuality, and it adds to the richness of the dynamics of your being. Get a sense of that there? The sound comes, that's interesting because I don't know if he was doing this, but that's how Hinduism views it, that the creation was a sound that started, and that sound was Aum. then everything started to flow out from that vibration. And so that's why they find that sound, and many in the Western world find that sound very helpful. Here's where three little readings in which Casey tries to help us identify our soul's purpose. Your purpose may be two cars in the garage, a chicken in the pot, money in the bank, and a good-looking spouse. But your soul has other ideas. And if you've lived long enough, which I can see many of you have, you know your soul had other ideas. The purpose of the heart is to know yourself, to be yourself. Gladys, his stenographer, told me when he raised his voice, she capped the words. So that's what you're seeing here. And yet, to be one with God.
We'll be right back with more from John Van Auken on Our Amazing Soul Life, here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into the lecture with John Van Auken on Our Amazing Soul Life.
The purpose is that you might know yourself to be yourself, and yet one with the creative forces, not the destructive forces. Those are the dark forces. Not the things that put people down, but the things that lift people up. Not the things that judge you heavy and lay heavy trips on you, but those things that lift you up and bring out the best in you. The creative forces, or, he says, God. Those are akin to the God forces. And this last one I like a lot. Don't put the material first, for you have to live with yourself a long, long while. You realize, if you pause for a minute and think, okay, there's a part of me that is immortal, eternal. A part of you goes, I'm not so sure. Doesn't it? That's because of what we've been dealing with. But you're going to have to live with yourself a long while, so you might as well become acquainted with yourself, know yourself, and your relationship to the creative forces. So this, Casey has laid down the fundamental purposes of our existence. Know yourself to be yourself, yet one with the creative forces. Here's another one. Each experience of a soul entity in materiality is part of the whole experience of the entity. Each conception upon which the soul depends for its period of manifestation, which means an incarnation to us in the earth, is as but a moment, a day, a year in the activity of the greater entity. And if you get through that veil in yourself, boy, your life shifts. Because it's like Shakespeare's view. You start to view your life as a role you're playing, and these are the other characters. This is very interesting, but there's more to me than just this character and this situation. You know, very interesting. Thus, it could not be said that an individual conception is a beginning, though you and I think we began. You know, I was born in New Jersey, so John began in New Jersey. Yikes. Not true. You know, the depths of your being are much, much bigger. It is a part of a whole. And from these activities first conceived in the mind, this is the other thing. Casey saw us more as minds inhabiting physical vehicles, and that there were levels to our mind. Conscious three-dimensional mind works pretty well out here. It's socialized, it's influenced by its parents, by its upbringing, by its memories. But just beyond the veil is a subconscious mind, a much bigger than the conscious mind, and beyond the subconscious, and another veil, is the superconscious mind. And that is your vast part that's in touch with the universal consciousness. And there is no time in spirit. Now, being a time-space entity, that is mind-boggling. I was in my 20s when I first read There Is No Time and No Space, and that was really hard. But if you can kind of visualize a bird high above a river, and that your soul is like that bird high above a river, it's not like you down on the raft going through the river, seeing where you've been just a little ways back and where you might be headed. You actually see the whole, and therefore time is not the reality for the guy on the raft, you see? And so if you work with these things, you start to get a feel for them. There is time and space here, though. And you can work in that, but one of the teachings Casey had is time is malleable. You can, in a moment, have a phenomenal realization or achieve a great insight, or you can have several years struggling with something and just momentarily come out of it. So time has an elasticity to it that you need to be aware of. And even though you're, as far as space is concerned, even though you're here and so am I in a physical body, you can learn techniques to have a metaphysical experience way beyond this dimension. And so you just keep those things in mind as you journey through this world. We are, believe it or not, according to him, star travelers. I know we feel like earthlings, terrestrial beings, but here we go. As an entity passes on from this present time or this solar system, this sun, these forces, it passes through the various spheres, leading first into that central force known as Arcturus. Believe it or not, back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, Edgar Cayce was already talking about stargates. And Arcturus was the stargate in and out of this system for our souls. I know the movie and the TV show have become a big hit, and we take it for granted that it's a hot idea. He was talking about it back then and said that this star we know as Arcturus is indeed the stargate. And he actually gave a reading. I mean, you can actually go through the stargate without death. He gave a reading for a woman who had been there the night before in her sleep. And she was mystified when she got the reading. He said, oh, here's one who was at Arcturus last night, marvelously re-energized and all. And she said, no, I was in my bed in Virginia Beach. No, your soul was able to leave. Nearer the Pleiades, the seven sisters, eventually an entity passes into the inner forces, inner sense. Then they may again, after a period of nearly 10,000 years to us on Earth, enter into the Earth to make manifest those forces gained in its journey through the stars, its passage. In entering, the entity takes on those forms that may be known in the dimensions of that plane which it occupies, there being only three dimensions as of the Earth, but there may be seven as in Mercury, or four in Venus, or five in Jupiter. Now, he's not talking about on the surface of Jupiter. He's talking in the fourth, fifth dimension where your mental self, your spiritual self, is active. You understand? You're not incarnate in a body on Mercury. Only here do you do that. There may only be one as in Mars. There may be many as in those of Neptune. Or they may be even as nil until purified in the Saturn's fires. Ooh. Well, here's his concept. This solar system, the sun and the planets, are comparable in his vision to a university for the soul. And each of the planetary planes, not the physical structures, each of the planetary planes are a college in the system. And it identifies with the actual ancient astrology. You know, Dr. Carl Jung, the great depth psychologist, he was always fascinated by the fact that primitive ancient people were so interested in the stars, in the planets, and in the influence of the planets. They should be growing corn, and yet they're really into this. They study it, they analyze it, they document it. And sure enough, Casey said, that's because your soul was energetically and consciously involved in lessons and activities and learning in these colleges. And when not incarnating in the earth realm, the soul actually sojourns in those areas. Classical astrology knew this, and their descriptions fit, and so here they are. Soul wanting to develop or enhance its mental skills would go to Mercury, the mind, mental development, reason, order, and the like. Venus, the heart, the arts, music, art, creativity, healing, and the like. Earth, the causal dimension, where one finds an active opportunity to use free will to change. Oh, you think you're this way? We have a place where you can prove it. Mars, madness, Casey said, the power, everyone's freedom to use the life force in forceful ways. to benefit or woe. So you go there to learn to gain control of your driven energy, your upset, your anger, your wildness. Jupiter, high-mindedness, high ideals, large groups and the masses. Saturn is where insufficient flesh is redone and you get to start over. Not a vacation spot. Casey gave a reading for a young woman. He was giving her soul reading, and he said, oh, here's one who's gone to Saturn often, and God loves one who's willing to start over. Yikes. You want to cleanse the whole thing? You take a visit there, and it's all cleansed, and you get a fresh start. Uranus, this fits with astrology, the extremes, the psychic, natural senses of the soul, in the sense of the Greek word psyche, which literally meant soul. So psychic means the senses of your soul, not of your body. Your body has five senses, but your soul has much more than that, and so we call them like clairaudience. You can hear more than your eardrums are hearing. Clairvoyance, more than the cones in my eyes are picking up, my soul can see much more. When Edgar looked at you, he also saw all the discarnates in the room as well as the incarnates. That was spooky. And he'd take a question from one of them sometimes just to freak us out. Yes, you over here near the screen. Edgar, there's nobody near the screen. Oh, yeah, he's as interested in the topic as we are. Yikes. Pluto consciousness. Of course, our scientists have just demoted Pluto, so the little bugger is no longer a planet. But Edgar had identified it as the consciousness. So when you finish with this university, you have a greater consciousness. You have a lot more of your soul's abilities honed and developed, and you move through the Stargate Arcturus onto other opportunities. If you want to read a lot more, and some of you have always come up to me and you're so fascinated by it, this is the book. This book is verbatim Casey readings on this topic, and the bookstore has it. And there's a lot more in that. Kevin Tedeschi and I wrote these, or compiled these books and put them in there. So you'll really get his readings on planetary influences and sojourns if you're interested in this sort of stuff. Now we come to what's driving you and me. Now, I know the outer self is driven to material success. But actually, Edgar says we're actually seeking home. It just touches me when I think that my soul is doing that, because I've been taking it on a wild journey away from home.
We'll be right back with more from John Van Auken on our amazing soul life here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We'll get right back into the lecture with John Van Auken on our amazing soul life.
Anyway, as the entity moves from sphere to sphere, it seeks its way to the home, to the face of the Creator that conceived it, the Father, the first cause. Casey identifies the first cause as, quote, that the created would be the companion for the Creator. Whoa. This is the reason we were created. And as a result, the created, now that's not your physical body, that's your soul, is given opportunities to, quote, show itself to be not only worthy of, but companionable to the Creator. Now we're talking about the Creator of the entire cosmos. Unless you want to be a very dull companion, you got a lot of magnificent journey to be on and to enrich and to develop yourself. I mean, the journey is abundant and vast and exciting. This is what your deeper self seeks. You might think you have to go somewhere, but really it's all happening in this dynamic of what Edgar called in that previous reading, the inner forces, the inner sense. So it's happening within you. Casey said that our taking on many forms in many different dimensions and spheres helps us to experience the whole of our being. That's why we travel so much. And of our Creator's consciousness, because the collective, the universal consciousness, contains it all. And the more you're aware of all of it, the more fascinating a companion you are. the more interesting you are, the more compatible or companionable you are. He said that, quote, self is lost in that of attaining for itself the nearer and nearer approach that builds in manifested form, whether in the Pleiades, Arcturus, Gemini, or in Earth, in Vulcan, or in Neptune. See, he adds a lot of value to our incarnating here. He says it's very purposeful, it's intentional, and it has a lot to contribute to the whole of our experience. Yet, despite our taking on many forms as we manifest ourselves, our true nature is, according to his readings, quote, as light, a ray that does not end, lives on until it becomes one in essence with the source of light. And as you know, the ancient Egyptians felt the same way about this. So now we come to the College Earth, cause and effect, the realm of testing. If you didn't know that, that's where you're abiding right now. Edgar said that the book of Job was written by the high priest Melchizedek for every incarnate soul to know what this world was about. Well, when I read that, I was not too happy to hear that because I had read the book of Job. It begins, the sons and daughters of God came before God to present themselves, and Satan came among them. Job turns to Satan, God turns to Satan and says, have you considered my servant Job, how good he is? And Satan says, you touch one thing of his physical life or his physical body, and he'll curse you to your face. And then God turns to Satan and says, test him. You see, in ancient Hebrew, Satan was the tester. Satan had a job, had a role. Okay? And so, as you know from the story, the first thing Satan does is test his body with boils and illness and all. And Job does not curse God, but keeps trying to plug through it all. Then he starts taking away his children, his property, his life. And all his buddies start saying, oh, Job, you've done something really bad and God is real upset with you. And Job said, no, God is merciful and understanding. And every time we've made a mistake or done something wrong, I've asked for forgiveness. I've worked on changing. I'm not going to accept that as the condition, as the situation. And he plugs through it. Eventually, God comes to Job and he says, Job, I'm going to ask you a question. And I want you to think for a few minutes before you answer it. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Now, Job's about 60 years old. And God says to him again, think before you answer this, where were you? And of course, most ministers use this to put us down as nothing compared to God. But the question actually is trying to get Job to realize, you were with me. We laid the foundations of this journey. We laid the foundations of this plane. You're a celestial being. You're a child of God. You're part of my journey. But this is the realm of testing. When you come here, as Hugh Lynn Casey, the firstborn son of Edgar Casey, used to say, all your karmic situations and all the difficulties are your opportunities. So I had to shift my head because I used to say, oh, gosh. Then I'd say, well, this is an opportunity. It's all about soul growth, you guys. Soul growth in you and soul growth in those around you. And so I put a little pearl here because Edgar spoke about the pearl as a highly symbolic and vibrational item that was created by an irritant. The oyster got a piece of something inside its shell that hurt, like a thorn in his side. But instead of griping about it for 20 years, spitting, cursing, it started to build around that little irritant this magnificent gem that everybody loves to have, the beautiful pearl. And that's soul growth. That's our journey here, is soul growth. Yes, there are a lot of other submissions for us, but keep that in mind, that really what you're dealing with is soul growth. What's the outcome of soul growth? Well, it's not going to the land of harmony, but the dimension, the state of harmonic consciousness and vibration. So it's higher vibes, enlightened consciousness, and being in harmony with the whole. And the whole includes more than just yourself. So this harmony expands out. You first have to find harmony in yourself, with yourself, but then your surroundings you must operate in more harmoniously. And of course, Earth has developed this thing we call reincarnation. And as Buddha said, cycles of birth, life, death, and rebirth. And as you know, the idea is that you and I are trapped in this wheel. We are caught in this cycle. At some point, the morning stars thought this was an interesting dimension, the dimension of form, of three-dimensional projections. The Maya tell the story that when we first projected, we still maintained such celestial consciousness that we were highly sophisticated and still celestial beings just looking around three-dimensionally, okay? So when you saw one of us, you actually saw the soul because the whole being was consciously aware that he was projecting a form of itself for to be in this dimension. Unfortunately, gradually, too much of the consciousness moved into the focus of the projection, and as Carl Jung points out, all of this fell into the unconscious, behind the veil. And now, you identified so much with the body and your personality and this realm that you lost touch, and death occurred. When the body died, you thought you died. It was an illusion. But it was a powerful illusion, and you bought into the illusion. In the Edgar Cayce readings, he comes out and says, there is no death, which is really amazing since I've buried some people. And he is seeing the mind, the soul, the essence, the vibrations, the energetics of an entity in a body. The body stopped working, but the other parts are still alive. They're not projecting to where the cones of my eyes can see them, or the vibrations of their voice will vibrate my eardrums. But yet, if I get into my deeper senses, I can see their essence, and I can hear them. And, of course, I told you Edgar could do that naturally. One time, he and Gertrude, his wife, were asleep on the second floor of their house, and a tapping came on the window. And Gertrude was kind of alarmed. Edgar said, oh, I know who this is. I'll be back in a minute. And he puts on his robe and goes downstairs, opens the front door. And she hears him speaking, so she goes downstairs a little while later. And he says, oh, you remember the girl who used to visit us at the shop in Selma, Alabama? Well, she died a few years back, and she came by to visit, but she didn't want to come into our bedroom and talk, so she tapped on the window. That essence comes down into a physical form that is formed by the laws of nature and a woman. You can only get into this dimension through a woman, unless you just want to be a ghost, which is not total functionality here. She forms this vehicle following the laws of nature inside her, and Edgar says within 24 hours of the birth of the body, the soul enters the body. Once in, though, the veil falls, and you're in. And then he said, he used the word, you're encased in a body for a sojourn. Yikes. This is a celestial being trapped now in a three-dimensional vehicle for about 80 to 100 years, you know. And you and I know what that's like. So then the thing stops working on you so well, and you got to leave.
We'll be right back with more from John Van Auken on Our Amazing Soul Life, here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into the lecture with John Van Auken on Our Amazing Soul Life.
And we call this death, but actually Edgar says he has a wonderful series on the first 10 minutes after death in which your soul, your outer self goes, what just happened? And becomes concerned. Things aren't operating like they should. And it sort of moves back into its deeper self very near the veil and is absorbed into the bigger mind, which is more comfortable with this. And Edgar says that happens almost every night when you sleep. Unless you had a big pizza at midnight, you're actually going to slip through that veil into your soul self. So you're familiar with this. And if you've ever worked on dreams and meditation and inner work, it's going to be very familiar to you because you've been in that state many times. You won't be so surprised. He actually gave a reading in which he said in the 60s and 70s, we're going to have a whole new view of death. And what happened in the late 60s, early 70s? Near-death experience. Now they're on Amazon.com, they're like 30-some books on people who died and recorded it. Basically, what happened is the medical profession of all people became so sophisticated with their chemistry, their electricity, and their physical manipulations, which we've seen on TV enough now to where we know what it means when they say, clear! All of us know, right? that they could bring a dead person back to life. Now, I want you to capture this. On the operating room table or the emergency room table, there is nothing but a blue, gray, clammy, dead carcass. There's no electricity, no nervous system, no blood flowing, no breathing. You got it? It's really dead. And yet, when they got it back to life, in the recovery room, the doctor would go in and say something like, man, we had a close one with you. And the patient would say, yeah, I was amazed when you jumped up on my chest like that. And the doctor would go, wait a minute, you were dead. He said, well, I thought it was strange too, but I was over in the corner. And the nurse did this, and you did that, and da do do do. And all the medical guys did was record these and say, something associated with the dead person was conscious in the room. That's the way a scientist doesn't box himself in, you know, and saw what we did. And you know how this all developed. Now it's big time, and they got multiple layers to it. So there's a transitional period here that's very tricky. But once the adjustment is made, the soul awakens and it's on its journey again. And it can do whatever it wants to do. Or he says if it's numb or semi-conscious about the whole of its being, it drifts around here in the borderland as a ghost, a trapped soul. But if it has any sense of consciousness, it usually is drawn by the magnetics of the creative force to a higher level, and it starts to make its journey and get on its way. Now, notice if it comes back in and incarnates again, this isn't the same body we had here, right? We all burned or buried that one. You're coming into a new body. And Jesus said, we sweep your house clean, and you come back and bring seven devils with you. The seven spiritual centers, the seven energetics of your attitude, all your karma. And you come back in for the sojourn here, you see, and you go out. But you can break out of the wheel. He actually gave a reading for something like 18 people who were told, this will be your last incarnation. One of them were a pair of brothers, and the first brother came and Edgar said, this is your last incarnation. And the other brother heard that, so he came to get a reading. He said, you told my brother Mort that this was his last thing. It's probably the same for me too, right? And Edgar from trance said, oh no, you're one of those souls who wants to be here until all the souls are freed of this dimension. And Edwin goes, when did that go down? When did that vote happen? If you want soul growth, the best way to grow is relationships. Ay, ay, ay. Nothing will grow you faster than to set up relationships. Edgar and Gertrude's two sons were on opposite side of most armies and influences in their previous lives. Can you imagine them as two boys in the house? Yeah. But eventually they grew to love one another, cooperate, play bridge together. But at first, these two souls had a lot of issues with one another. You are actually in situations to help your soul growth. And in your dynamics of relationships, that's where you have much of your growth. Now, you're not locked in. I want to point out one little detail. A young girl came and said, why do I have so much karma with my mother? And Edgar from trance said, there's no karma between the two. If you resolve it, it's done for you. Your mother will work it out with someone else. You see? Now, on another reading, he said a woman asked why she was from New York, married to this guy. He was impotent and confined to a wheelchair, but she loved him. And she asked Edgar Casey about the situation. And he said in a previous life, he was one of the greatest of the crusaders, but every time he went off to the wars, he put you under lock and key. And you swore you'd get even with him. You've got him right where you always wanted him. Choose thou, he said. He went on to explain to her, he could have worked this out with some other soul who had an attitude that they had to deal with, but she wanted to teach him the lesson. And remember, she said, I love him. So even though he was a nasty old bugger to her in one situation, she had an energetic with him in many situations, many parts of their relationship. So keep in mind that though he told the young daughter, if it's done with you, you don't have to worry about it. Your mother will work it out. Unless you say to yourself, I'm going to get even with that bugger, then you have just bonded yourself. So be real careful about that. Say something like, well, I hope he works it out and God will help him and all that, but I'm moving on from this.
Well, that's all the time we have for the show today. Hope everyone enjoyed listening to my selection from John Van Auken's lecture entitled Our Amazing Soul Life. Remember, if you'd like to listen to the full lecture, sign up for the free e-news on edgarcaycee.org. That's edgarcaycee.org. And of course, it is free to all members at edgarcaycee.org/members. And don't miss your chance to see John speak in person at one of his upcoming events on October 23rd, and it runs through November 19th. And this is an online learning e-group entitled Achieving Higher States of Consciousness Using Ancient Egyptian Concepts. To sign up for this, go to edgarcaycee.org/e-group. October 26th in Fairfax, Virginia, John Van Auken is doing a talk on Casey on the Life Force Within You, Rejuvenate and Illuminate Body, Mind, and Spirit. And for details on this or other field programs, visit edgarcaycee.org/fieldconferences. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful week.